Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor Lacaine. One of our biggest challenges we face as Americans is the internal split among people over politics. Friends and families are fighting about which party or candidate they support. Some of these divisions have been amplified by the Russians, who have put millions of messages on social media to intensify divisions. But the Russians amplified divisions that were already there. They didn't create them. Abraham Lincoln once observed, "A house divided against itself cannot stand." What can we do about our house divided today? How can we bring our country together? One woman who is facing this challenge head on is Deborah Davidian, founder and chief citizens officer of a new organization she founded, The Chisel. Also joining us will be Glenn Kaplan, marketing and creative advisor for The Chisel. They are here with us today to talk about solutions for bringing together a divided America. Deborah Davidian, welcome to All Together Now.
Eleanor, thanks so much for the invitation. And I just have to say, yes, let's give them something to talk about. And we forgot the love component. We totally forgot love. And you've heard me talk before, and you know that I can go on forever about this. But, you know, the one commonality we've all forgotten is that we share a love for this country, and we share a love of humanity, and we're allowing superficial and crap and symptomatic and other issues to get in the way of the root commonalities of America. And so I'm delighted to be here. And Glenn, hi. And
hi.
Eleanor,
hi.
Thank you.
Good. And yes, welcome to you, Glenn Kaplan. So happy you could join us today.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
Good. And you have a great radio voice. So
we love Glenn for so many more reasons than just his voice.
I'm sure that. So I just met Deborah at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. last week at a wonderful book party launching her new book called What's Your American Dream? So I want to start by asking you to describe us. What is that book and how did it come about and why did you write it?
Okay. Eleanor, I have a tremendous amount of respect for you, but I have to make one correction. It's not my book. This is a book that was created with a massive collaboration of 30, and a bipartisan coalition, I should say, of 30 universities, media outlets, and public policy organizations spanning the country and spanning the political spectrum. So we had public policy schools on the left and the right helping to make this happen. We had media outlets on the left and the right making this happen. We had journalism schools on the left and the right, as well as lots of policy organizations, whether, you know, women's rights or economic policy or what's the future of work or the environment and so on. And so this was a groundswell effort that, or a product of The Chisel, but we brought together lots and lots of different people with different ideas, all who promised and all who are committed first, country first, politics second. And that's really important. So this is not me. This is this massive collaboration. And we're delighted to have lots of our collaborating partners at the event at the National Press Club last week, and delighted to have been able to meet you. So thank you.
That's great. So I read the book this week. I won't call it your book. It's a book from The Chisel, and it's clearly a collaborative enterprise. And I want to say, for our listeners to describe it, first of all, I want everybody who's listening to get the book and read it. And what surprised me in the book was, it actually sort of surprised me, but I sort of knew it was true, how much agreement there can be across left and right. Now, you focus on practical things that people care about, whether it's what do we do about education and about healthcare? I've believed for a very long time that really most Americans would agree on 80% of issues. But we have the media focusing on the areas of disagreement the 20% that we disagree on, whether it's guns or reproductive rights or whatever kind of amps up the ratings for the media, is what is focused on. And there is no real self-interest by anybody to focus on the 80% that we agree on. And then when I read the book here, What's Your American Dream, it really lays out in very good detail the fact that it is true. We actually, most of us agree on 80% of things. Is that what you saw when you saw the book?
Absolutely. So what we set out to do was we set out to understand what are Americans' goals with respect to a whole series of different issues. And we addressed 34 specific issues, all within the context of about seven major themes, the themes being the economy, social justice, liberty and regulation, healthcare and education, services, governance, foreign affairs. And within those 34 issues, what we found, we had people, this was a survey that was done online and by phone. We had, you know, it's methodologically sound, demographically representing the Americans of voting age, by gender, by age, by income, by geography, by race, and also we asked people to self-identify. Are you far left? Are you moderate left? Are you center? Are you moderate right? Are you right, or are you other? And what we found across the board in a really fascinating way, and let me just step back one quick second to say that the organizations that I cited were all very, very instrumental in shaping this survey, so that when we were asking the questions and when we were identifying the issues to address, there was a lot of interaction between the left and the right in coming up with non-fundamental kind of questions, non-leading questions, and non-leading questions, which is one of the things that you're looking for in polls or current surveys, which have an agenda. Our agenda was trying to figure out, what are Americans' shared values? Do we even have any shared values? Especially because we hear so much vitriol and nastiness and accusations being thrown back and forth. And so what we found was, people were identifying, you know, their own political affiliation. So what we found of the 34 issues, in 3% of the issues, the number one goal cited for how you would achieve your American dream, not the American dream in general, not the 2.5 cars in your 25 square foot with 2.5 kids, but rather what is it going to take for you to achieve your American dream. And what we found among those 34 issues was that in 53% of the time, the top goal cited by left, right, and center was the same.
How often?
Center all said their number one goal was X, okay, whatever the issue was. And in an additional 21% of the time, it was the goal was one or two across the board. And people had choices of 5, 6, 7, 8 goals from which to choose. So as you were suggesting a little while ago, kind of the 80-20 rule, you know, 80% of the time, we are sharing those similarities, those shared values, and that's really important. Now, these are shared values in terms of aspirational, forward thinking, where we want to be for ourselves, our families, our communities. It's not how to solve the problem, but we've forgotten, given all these conversations that we have on, you know, online, or the nasty sound bites, or the vitriol that we hear back and forth, people are focusing on symptoms too much, and they're not allowing for a real debate to happen. But what we've forgotten is that Americans, in fact, do have so many shared values. And, you know, we can go into some of the specifics.
Let's go into one of them, like pick one, maybe education, the shared goal of people, just pick one that you resonate with and talk about how left, right, and center actually agree this is the number one goal in this issue area.
Right. Well, interestingly enough, and especially given the time frame in which the acuteness of the tragedy in Florida, number one goal for left, right, and center across the board, you know, in massive amounts, is we want data as well as through anecdotal comments from people. You know, how is this going to have an impact on life? or your community if these goals are achieved. So, you know, the whole notion of safety in schools is extraordinarily important. Left, right, and center all said that was their number one goal. Interestingly enough, the number two most cited goal, also left, right, and center, was we want our kids, our children, our K through 12 students to develop thinking skills. This is really, really important because a lot of times there's a dichotomy, you know, do the right believe that we want kids to be, that they value education? Does the left believe we value education? You know, who's valuing education? But that was the second most cited number one goal, left, right, and center across the board. And in a similar fashion, the next level is we want kids to be able to develop critical education. So fundamental to America. And we share these values in such an important way that we're getting that when it comes to the discussion about guns in Florida, discussions about homelessness, or the discussions even about the problems that we made up. So we end up relegating our conversations to the symptoms and not the shared goals or the dreams and the values that we all share. And that's, I think, one of the distinctions of what's happening with the conversations or the non.
Great. And Deborah, you're sounding just a little choppy. I'm going to ask Glenn a question, and maybe if you've got a headset or something you could put on. Glenn, I want to turn to you for a minute now.
Sure.
You're kind of the marketing guru here. What do you think, you know, in order to make sales on things or to get attention, it seems like you have to be the most outrageous and the most critical and the most disagreeing and...
Actually not. I mean, I think the innovative work that Deb has done through the chisel, I think it's for all the reasons we all agree, because at this time is terribly, terribly important. But speaking as a veteran advertising person, I think a lot of the sort of divisiveness and even hatred that's being sown is actually a kind of second-rate way of selling things. Because if you look historically, societies that have practiced tolerance and allowed people to be different from each other actually do better in business over time. And the United States historically has grown by, you know, being welcoming and allowing differences and tolerating them, because it's all good for business. It means that the society allows and welcomes more customers. So quite apart from the idealism of all that, it's really better for business if we have a society where we agree on certain basic freedoms and certain things that are important to us, as demonstrated in What's Your American Dream. And we don't spend our marketing time and our advertising cleverness trying to divide people over their minor differences, but rather, you know, look to emphasize the things that we all share together. It's better for society, it's better for business, it's better for people. It just, you know, it's just better all around.
Good, I like that. So Deborah, back to you. Now, this survey, I know you've had many, many people participate, as you say, online and over the phone. Is that survey still open, or is this kind of a done deal and now you've got the agenda, you're going to move ahead? Or is there a way that our listeners could still participate in the survey?
Absolutely. In fact, we want as many people as possible to be participating. This is the survey that was effectively for, you know, by the end of last year. We will be doing the survey every year because we want to get out there a pulse of America. What is America thinking? What are our shared values? Let's create a mechanism so that people can come to the, you know, they can break bread together. We've forgotten that you can put a Democrat and a Republican at a table together and recognize that these folks have stuff in common. They can break bread together because we've gotten so ensconced in this nastiness that we've forgotten our shared values. So yes, you can go to thechisel.com/American Dream and you can do the survey, and that will be feedback for next year's book. You can also get more information on the book or buy the book at www.yesweagree.com. But what we want to be able to do, and what we're the next step for this book is getting it into the hands of each and every member of Congress, each of the members of the cabinet, the Supreme Court, so serving the president. And we have somebody who's going to be hand-delivering it to the president soon, as well as the directors of all the federal agencies and each of the governors. So I think it's extremely important that your elected officials and appointed officials are able to hear the voices of every Americans. We have lost that. There is a disconnect. And actually, that's one of the reasons that we created the Chisel in the first place, is that there's this massive disconnect between what is happening in Washington and what's happening not only in the heartlands, but in the inner cities and in the elite parts of the country and the lowlands and the highlands. Our members of Congress have said it, and again, one of the reasons that we created the Chisel is that some conversations with members of Congress saying, you know, we're often so out of touch with our constituents because we're spending 50 to 80% of our time raising money. And I know that's a really big issue for you, is the whole dark money issue, or, you know, campaign finance reform. How do we think through this? How do we make sure that, you know, the dollars spent in campaigns are cultivating and attracting the future leaders who are going to have the most integrity or are going to have the best track record in making things happen for all of us together and not just special interest groups?
Great. Well, I want to underscore that for our listeners. If you want to participate in the survey, go to thechisel.com, thechisel.com. / American Dream, and you can participate in this ongoing survey to see what does America think, what are our shared values from all across the political spectrum. So I encourage you to participate in that. I want to pick up on two threads of what you just talked about, families who disagree, and also the dark money. First, with the families, I got to tell you, our family is actually my husband's family, but we've been married for a very long time, over 25 years. And every year, his family would have a Christmas party at his brother's house. So first his mother, and then when they passed, at his brother's house. And then this past year, it had gotten so divisive after the 2016 campaign. Some were Democrats and really hoping that, Bernie or Hillary would win, and others, staunch Republicans, really wanting Trump in there to shake things up. And it had gotten so bad that for the first time ever, they canceled the Christmas party because they felt the disagreements were so intense that there was, it wouldn't be comfortable to be in the same room together. So what do you have to say, all this work you've done with people across the spectrum, how do you take a family like that where you're fighting, or friends I know who no longer are talking to each other, how do you cross the divide now that it's so hostile?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, it's always so sad to see families and communities ripped apart because of politics. The whole idea of politics and polities is such that the objective is to bring people together and bring their collective dreams and visions and aspirations and goals together in a way that everybody benefits. And so we've done exactly the reverse. And I think we've all gotten lazy about the way we have discussions, and we all need to take our own responsibility for engaging in those kinds of discussions, because, the more you swing at somebody, the harder the other one's going to swing back. And then we end up in this vicious spiral of ugliness. And, we are to blame for this. This is our doing. This is our making. We have fallen, and I'll get back to your question in a second, but I think it's really important to recognize, as Americans, we have abrogated our responsibilities. We have abrogated this debate. A civic debate. We can still agree to disagree, but I don't have to call you a beep it a beep it a beep it a beep for me to get my point across. And so shame on us for letting the Russians do our debate. Shame on us for letting the media use sound bites to engage us in conversations that are more fictionalic than anything, and they're not at all productive. This is our responsibility, and we deserve what we get. So in that regard, I almost have to say that we're a little frustrated that we even have to do this, because what is it that we're trying to accomplish for ourselves in our communities? And we need to make it less about the individual politicians and the politics and the labor, rather
talk about issues. Let's talk about them in a way that relates to our own personal experiences and then how. So part of what has to happen is people need to step back a second and listen. You know, they need to be listening more. We all need to listen more. We need to ask more questions. You know, why do you feel that way? How does this what? Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, good. So so you're still chopping up a little, so I'm going to invite you to speak, maybe stay in closer to your microphone and see if that works. Otherwise, we might need to switch to a landline.
Sure.
Let's go now to the question on the dark money. So you've got these policies that 80% of Americans can agree on the goals of what we want. Now, we may have different views of how to get there, but if we can stay focused on the shared goal, as you're saying, we can gives us a better chance to work out the pathway to reach the goal, mm-hmm. as opposed to we're killing each other just fighting over what is the goal.
Right.
So, exactly. So that's good. But even with that, so say we have, let's stick with education, our sample here. We've been talking about everybody agrees we want to have a safe environment for our children, and we want to develop critical thinking in our education. What do you do about the dark money? So for now, there's companies that will make hundreds of millions of dollars by privatizing it. They kind of want to undo public education, privatize the schools. Somebody's going to go pay them. So their kids will be able to think critically. And what do you do when dark money is out and they're financing campaigns? They spent $500,000 in the mayor's race in Boston, for example, trying to get a candidate in who supported vouchers and wanted them as a way to undermine public education. What do you do about dark money? And when you try to implement these programs, you're going to run right into the buzzsaw of the vested interest and the billionaires.
Right. And that's certainly one of the big problems. I mean, I think the two of the biggest problems facing democracy today are dark money and term limits. But that's a very personal opinion. That's not an opinion of just the system. You know, the issue of vouchers and dark money. I mean, I think you might have cited some stuff, but let's just talk about the issue of campaign finance and so on. Often it is very difficult to bring, what sounds like people who have entirely different views of the world together. We have a proposal on our site that was brought together that we introduced to.
Sorry.
Excuse me. Deborah, you're chopping up just too much. You can keep the video on, but the studio is trying to call you on your landline.
Oh, sorry. Okay. I thought that was another call. Okay. If they call me again, I'll.
Yeah. Okay. And Glenn, are you still with us?
I sure am.
Fantastic. So Glenn, I want to ask you from a marketing point of view, do you think this idea about people having the same, shared value, shared goals, is something that's sellable? Like, how do you plan to market this in a way that the American people?
If I had, an enormous marketing budget like a big company, I believe that this concept would resonate emotionally with people across the country. It would need time and it would need persuasion to get the message out there. But I believe in the basic decency of America. My grandparents were all immigrants, and we grew up being told how grateful we were to be in this country and told about awful stories about the old country and how hopeless things were and how bad things were. And I think that the marketing message that we're all Americans, that we all share an incredible country that is really a fluke of history, if you think about it, a wonderful, miraculous fluke of history. I think that given time and given repetition, which is the key to all propaganda, both good propaganda and bad propaganda, that this would gain traction. And, in an ideal world, more and more people would begin to see that, and it would generate, you know, more tolerance and more to Deb's point about what basic civil discussion and citizenship is about. So I believe very strongly in the possibility and the hope of it.
Fantastic. So that's encouraging. And Deborah, are you with us now on the telephone?
I am indeed.
Fantastic. So I had just asked you the all critical question, and I was dying to hear your answer about the blockage that we have, or like the biggest block we've got to implementing policies that favor, you know, the common good and the majority of Americans, is the dark money and the billionaires and the corporations with the money that they're pumping in to influence who's getting elected and how they vote. How do we combat that dark money to make sure that these policies, where we can get 70 or 80% of Americans to agree on, that we actually move in that direction?
Yeah, this is a really, really, it's an important issue. And part of it, one of the things that the survey put forward or expressed, especially in the commentaries from Americans, we had more than 5,000 comments that were offered in the way of people writing in comments or expressing comments on the phone. That there is a tremendous lack of trust in our institutions, in our political institutions, our financial institutions, our religious institutions, and so on. And we need to get our political house in order. And I don't mean the Democrats have to fix stuff up or the Republicans do. I think we need systematically one of the things that is being called for in the survey, Americans want to see accountability. They want to know that they can trust our institutions, but we can't trust them right now because there is too much influence from dark money. So what happens? We end up with whistleblowers being, exercised from organizations. We have recrimination happening from people who are trying to do the right thing. We have people scared to open their mouths because we don't trust the institutions that we have. So I kind of go back to this notion of, one, we all need to take responsibility and get involved in a process, whether it's at the very high level or if it's at your local community school board level. And I've seen the way that we go down the slippery slope on a lot of this dark money related stuff because you allow it to happen in your family, you just let it go by, or you allow it to happen in your local church or synagogue, or you allow it to happen in your local school board, or you allow it to happen at the local commissioner's office. And then by the time it feeds up to, to the White House or to the Capitol or to the Supreme Court or somewhere else, you end up with all of these people who have ultimately made not so much sacrifices, but they've compromised integrity. They've compromised the integrity of what we're trying to achieve to get pragmatic and compassionate and constitutional results for all of Americans together. And so it goes back to all of us. I mean, it's easy for us to point the blame and point fingers, but I think we all need to start pulling up a mirror to ourselves and say, what am I doing wrong? What am I allowing to happen? You know, what did I write off in the way of, you know, that insurance claim? Or did I falsify my Medicaid claim? Or, you know, did I work 3 hours but charge my employer 5 hours? I mean, we all need to take responsibility for our own actions and the actions of the people with whom we're, you know, directly related and working with. And so the way that we're structuring, our proposals, and I'll go back to the campaign finance reform project that we were talking about a little while ago. So we brought together two organizations, one from the left and one from the right, and the recognition was that so much money is concentrated with so few people and that we need to get Americans more engaged in the political process. Well, how do you do that? Well, you can do it with smaller amounts of money. And so what these two groups came up with was a notion that if you offer a $200 tax credit for Americans who contribute to political campaigns, then you have much larger, much more wider spread political engagement and activism, but also awareness of what's happening in our local communities or our state communities or at a federal level, because people feel as if they're out of the game. People feel as if they just can't reach up there. But we're trying to get people more politically and civically engaged. Go for what you believe in, but ask the right questions and be honest about it and think about the causes, not the symptoms. And so that's one example of what has happened, of a really interesting initiative, this $200 tax credit, which then, as a result of bringing these two groups together, which ordinarily people would think, oh, they wouldn't come together, as a result of their working together, two other sets of issues came up about how they could work together further to, one, get rid of foreign money coming in by virtue of credit cards, and then the other is the idea of crossing borders, like state to state or municipality to municipality, to fund somebody's campaign, because that also works against what is it in that local jurisdiction's best interest. And so as a result of starting with shared values that both of these groups, one left and one right, wanted to make more widespread the idea of political engagement through this mechanism, they then realized they had a lot in common as well on, here are two other mechanisms that we can use to move things forward. Is it a total fix? No. Is it the end of the story? Absolutely not. But what it does is it shows that when we have a vested interest, a shared interest in fixing the dark money problem, we can get there. And in a similar fashion, when you think of what happened, I guess, yesterday or this morning with Florida, you know, has Florida fixed the problem with guns in schools and safety for schools? Certainly not. But are they moving a little bit more closely to establishing accountability, establishing more safety, bringing about a little bit more reason to a system whereby our children are in jeopardy and people are scared? We need to combat this with the notion, again, shared values. And so here a bunch of people came together and said, look, we're most concerned that our kids need to be in a safe environment in which to learn. Okay, let's address this. And they came together and they're addressing it. Maybe it's more incremental than people would like to think that it is, but it's moving in a direction. And so in a similar fashion, if we can see some positive results there, there might be some bolder actions for making things both more accountable, because we dropped the ball on so many areas with regard to Nicholas Cruz and any of the social services. We dropped the ball on accountability. We've dropped the ball on so many areas that if we can fix some of these, we can move toward the safety and then ultimately the critical thinking skills and the creative thinking skills and creating good civic, you know, young leaders from our schools. But we're going to have to do it step by step to regain the trust that Americans need to rebuild with one another.
Yeah, I think, well, there's a lot there. And I do agree that when people take action is when we'll see a difference in what the policies are. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the problem right now, is that no matter what policy you introduce and say, you know, we've got 90% of people behind this, for example, background checks on people before they buy guns, there's very strong agreement behind that, even in among NRA members. Mm-hmm. But even with agreement around a policy, that doesn't translate into, well, then that's what the elected officials are going to do. And we know, you know, the dark money in various ways, whether it be the gun companies that are making billions off of selling our 300 million plus guns that are in the country, or the pharmaceutical companies having a vested interest in which way our healthcare system goes. Really, you go right down the line. There's vested interests who are trying to promote their self-interests over the common interest. But really, the key, I think, for people to understand is, like you say, we're allowing too much of that to happen. Mm-hmm. We're allowing these people to have more influence because of their money, that actually, if we all get active and if we get involved, we can make a difference. And that means registering to vote. It means voting. It means speaking out. Look at those, the high schoolers in Parkland, Florida, got incredibly active. None of them are old enough to vote, but they all got active around gun safety and making schools safer. And they pushed Florida, which is one of the most pro-NRA, pro-gun state legislatures in the country, and they pushed Florida to actually take some measures on gun safety, as you mentioned. So mm-hmm. I think when we use our voice, when we use our vote, there's way more of us than there are of the special interest, and they thrive when we hide. So we have to stop hiding and we have to get active so we can implement some of these policies that we want.
Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. And in fact, when you know, if you look at one of the issues that we covered was Congress's functioning. And so, you know, people were able to choose among a whole bunch of different goals or values of, you know, what do you want Congress to be doing or how do you want them to be functioning? Across the board, left, right, and center all came up with the number one goal that was most frequently cited is that I trust Congress to put we the people over party and politics. And so that speaks 1,000% to your concern about the dark money. But unless we actually show up to vote. I mean, the people who are getting voted in, we're voting them in. Dark money isn't voting them in. I mean, dark money is helping with advertising, but we're the ones who are flicking the levers. We're the ones who are working on the local committees to decide who gets the nomination. We're the ones who are, going out and recruiting the best candidates possible. Are we recruiting the best candidates or not? Have we created a political system that is so absolutely abhorrent to people with competence and integrity that they're scared to death to be in the public limelight? That's part of the problem. We've created that ourselves. And so we have to take responsibility for the fact that we either pulled the lever or we didn't pull the lever, and who it is that's out in front.
Right, exactly. Well, Glenn, I want to pull you in this conversation here around this idea of marketing. Because we're not just marketing policy ideas. I think this whole shared values, doing the survey, getting people together from across the spectrum, getting clear about our common goals and our priorities, I think it's fabulous to do that. And at the same time, identifying our common ground is not enough. We're going to have to persuade Americans that their voice and their vote matters. And how do we do that? Have you thought about that piece of it from a marketing point of view? How do we get American citizens to exercise more their voice and their vote in the public square?
Well, I think the more that they feel they have a stake in it, I mean, this election cycle has many more candidates running in many more states on all sides than we've had historically, possibly ever. And so I think one of the good things that came out of some of the bad things about the 2016 election is that people who maybe didn't have the energy or the commitment or the idealism and the belief to get involved in the political system are doing so now. And I think that's a really good thing on all sides. Mm-hmm. And I think it needs to start at the local level. I mean, all of the really smart political organizers on both sides that I hear speaking all talk about how it starts with the local school board, it starts with your local zoning board, it starts with all these small local decisions, and it ladders up. And the more people, whatever it is that motivates them to get involved, once they start to get involved, they'll see that they do have a voice. And so I think that's really a great thing.
Yeah, I agree with that. And also, when you start seeing successes, it really inspires you. Like this passing in the legislature in Florida now on some gun safety legislation. That's amazing that within a couple of months or less that the high school students have mobilized enough people that they could actually influence the legislation like that, and you see a victory like, well, maybe I can do that in my home state. So
I absolutely agree.
We can start building on these victories.
In a way, it takes young people who don't know they can't accomplish something to accomplish something.
Right, exactly. And they've shown us the way. So now let's keep going. And we got the 3 million women on the who marched on the Women's March the day after Trump was inaugurated. You know, people are mobilizing in the streets in a way that I've never seen in my lifetime. So it's very encouraging. And now through this survey on the What's Your American Dream, we can see maybe how to focalize some of that grassroots energy that's out there.
And also what I think What's Your American Dream can help to build a foundation for is, as Deborah was saying, a civic discussion and a civic, civilized citizen exchange of ideas back and forth, because if you know that your opponent isn't a monster, but your opponent is somebody who agrees on basic things that you believe in underneath it all, but just has a different point of view about certain issues, the discussion that you have back and forth is a citizen's discussion. It's not a demonizing discussion.
Right, exactly. And I remember talking to the gentleman who wrote Getting to Yes, Roger Fisher from the Harvard Negotiations Project, said the key is, instead of it's me versus you, you want to turn it into you and I versus the problem,
mm-hmm.
or
yes.
you and I working towards a solution. And if we can make that fundamental shift, then we can have Americans working together. So you say, well, we all agree we want students to be safe and have a safe environment in learning. But, the pro-NRA people would say the way to keep them safe is to arm the teachers. And then you have some of the gun safety people saying, well, no, the way to keep them safe is to make sure that no one buys a gun who has a mental health problem or is likely to be dangerous to themselves or others. So, but at least you have a basis for a conversation. We all know what we want is safety in our schools so our children can learn without the fear of being killed.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to bring Deborah here. I ask you, this has been an amazing survey turned into a book here. What's next for the Chisel? What's this organization that you created? Why did you create it? And kind of what's next now that you've got this amazing report out?
Well, what we want to do what we want to do with this this report, as I had mentioned earlier, is one, disseminating it to our elected officials and public officials, because they need to hear the voices of Americans, and they're not typically hearing them on a day-to-day basis. One of the things that you sort of alluded to earlier with regard to the young kids, the high schoolers in Florida, they've been particularly effective. Well, they're effective because one, they're emotional. And they've experienced something, this tragedy, firsthand. It's a little harder for an 8 or a 9 year old from Sandy Hook to have expressed him or herself in the way that these young people are expressing themselves in Florida. What also is that we have in a way that is so incredible is the ability to leverage technology in a positive way. And one of the things these young people in Florida have done is they're some of the first people, I think, that are using technology in a positive way to get out positive social action, positive change. We see so much in the way of technology being used for for bad outcomes or for negative or for the ugly sound bites or the bad stuff that comes about because of so much of the social media. But so this is what we want to be able to do with the Chisel by putting forward. Great facts and issue backgrounders, which we do. In fact, we have a fabulous series on guns that were developed with experts that we brought in from both Brady Project people as well as NRA people, and you'll find that surprising. But we have two issue backgrounders. One is gun presence in the United States, and the other one is gun deaths in the United States. And everything that the Chisel does is extremely accessible. All of our information is infographic-based. With interesting pictures, and so that whether you're a CEO of a multinational company or you're an 11th grader, you're going to understand it, and you can go as far deep as you want with this information. So part of what we want to be able to do is to disseminate our material much more widely and broadly. Because we've got some great stuff. Go to the Chisel Bits on thechisel.com, and we've got stuff on family leave. We've got stuff on corporate income tax reform. We've got stuff on agricultural subsidies. And all of these materials have been developed by prominent groups on the right and the left combined. So everything we're putting forward, we've stripped away the partisanship. And that's part of what the Chisel is trying to do, is empower Americans with good information, it's not the highly spun stuff that you hear from MSNBC or from Fox, but rather it's balanced information, and not tit for tat balance, but really rigorous data that's presented in a really cool way that's very fun And, you know, we've got a bunch of 11th graders that love this stuff. And CEOs say, oh, my gosh, I've learned so much stuff from what you're putting forward. So we want Americans to start with some good information, solid information, that they can then go and have interesting conversations with their legislators, with their family at dinner, with their coworkers, with their in their boardrooms, because we have to be addressing all these elements from a civic engagement perspective, but it has a bearing on the corporate boardroom. It has a bearing on the independent sector. It has a bearing on, you know, the public sector and our elected officials and so on. And so we want that. We want to focus on the common ground and the common ideals, but also the common shared information that we believe is true about a variety of these issues. And so then you can start making intelligent tactical ways to fix problems. But one of the biggest problems we've had is, you know, Americans, we're coming from so many different angles. And so if you talk about the issue of homelessness, one person decides, you know, there are 10 million homeless in New York City. Oh, no, that's a dumb number. Somebody might say there are 1 million homeless in New York City, and somebody else says there are 500,000, and they're starting with entirely different data points. And then they end up with, you know, all of these notions of how do we address the problem and what are the costs going to be and so on and so forth. But from the get-go, they had started from divergent points, and then they're going to further diverge. So what we try to do is bring people together and make sure that they understand the common ground background, the common ground contextual information, so that then we can build together a solution that's going to not only satisfy everybody, but it's going to have positive, pragmatic results.
Yeah, and that all sounds good. I would say as you're disseminating this survey, which your American dream and the common ground policies that are there, make sure to get it to the mayors of the cities. The U.S. Conference of Mayors is amazing. It's the network for all the mayors. There's like 10,000 mayors of cities with residents of 30,000 people or more. And last year I wrote this, The Mayor's Guide to Gender Equality, on what mayors can do for women's equality, and gave it to every mayor in the U.S. Conference of Mayors. So it's a great network. If you haven't tapped them yet, that would be a good place to go and get your survey in their hands.
That's a great idea. Thank you. Love it.
Yeah, sure. So I'm wondering now, for you yourself, when you went through all of this and you got this wonderful report on the survey, what kind of response are you getting? I think it just came out, you know, last week with this book party that I saw. But Jen, we only have a couple more minutes. But what kind of response are you getting so far?
Well, it's been overwhelmingly positive. One, because people are surprised and thrilled to death to think that, oh, wow, Americans really do have so much in common. And, you know, Americans want to take care of things at home first when it comes to, you know, foreign aid. Americans want to love their jobs first when it comes to, you know, employment. Americans want to promote and move forward with new industries when it comes to, you know, American industry and so on. And so we have so many shared values. That was one thing that was so very exciting. The other stuff that we got, you know, that the feedback we were also getting is, you know, the policy wonks and the data junkies are looking at this book and they're saying, oh my gosh, this is really cool, and you presented it so beautifully, and look at all this substance. And then on the flip side, we have the creative professionals, you know, the arts and design folks, the engineers and the architects and so on, and they're looking at it and saying, wow, this stuff is so easy to understand. This is really cool. I can now have a conversation with so many different people. And so everything that we do, we try to make it as accessible as possible with lots and lots of pictures. And so, you know, people have said that, you know, one, you know, there's so much substance here, and then two, the production value is so incredible, and I have learned so much. And that's been really, really heartening, because now they feel more comfortable in turning around and asking somebody who might be of a different party or who might be of a different, you know, race or profession or whatever it is, hey, tell me a little bit more about what you're doing here. Why were you thinking such and such? But in a way that organically grows out of this book, because I now don't have to feel so scared that you and I are so different. that kind of a thing. And that's one of the really positive, exciting sentiments that has come out of this is we're all in this together. And, you know, when you and I first met last week, what was so incredibly encouraging is that people came from all walks of life. There must have been 12 or 15 different states that people had come in from specifically for this, for the event. They were from all different professions, different ages, different races, you know, different political parties, political persuasions. But when you look at, you know, when you look at and you felt the buzz, there was this really strong sense of we're all in this together. And we're really excited about the fact that, okay, I can pull my shoulders down. We share values. Now let's address that problem in a common way or together. And that was really uplifting and very, very exciting. And so we would love to be able to extend, you know, this book and the availability of the book to, you know, your audience. Again, people can go to yesweagree.com for the book, or they can go to thechisel.com and find out more about what we're doing. And we would love people's feedback. You know, if you want to post a proposal, let us know. If you want to sponsor or advertise with us, let us know. If you want to do the survey, you know, fill out the survey for next year. We want to know. We want everybody engaged in one way or another, because that's the only way, if we can all become more civically engaged, we are all going to better together our country so that it uplifts all of us. And that's
fantastic. Thank you so much for that and for your good work. And that's all the time we have. Deborah Davidian and Glenn Kaplan of The Chisel, thank you so very much for being with us today and for your important work.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Good news, listeners. The Progressive Radio Network now has an app where you can listen to both live and recorded PRN shows. Just go to the App Store on your cell phone and search for the Progressive Radio Network. Download the PRN app today. In case you missed any of these programs, they're available in the archives both on the PRN website and the PRN app. If you want to learn more about Breakthrough Solutions, go to thebreakthroughway.com. Right. Thanks for joining us. This is Eleanor LeCain. I'll be back next Thursday. All together now. Thank you.